March 26, 1973. It is with an old-timer from the Peace Country who is going to relate the experiences that he had during the time that he was up here from 1914 until now.
Well, in order to get this here kind of comprehensible, I got to start from the beginning, I guess. You know, my brother in the old country, you know, he wanted to tell me his, wanted to tell about my life here in Canada and the States, you know. I've been both places, you know. And I told him I didn't know anything about much of anything, as I just had an ordinary life, you know. And then he got a bit huffy, you know, and he says that if a life isn't worth recording, it isn't worth living. So I took him up on that, and I started to write, you know. And by golly, after I once started, I got so doggone much, you know. I had to send it over there in pieces, you know. And it got a very good reception in the old country, you know. Of course, he told me that there was a lot of that stuff that was unprintable. Well, I didn't think that it was supposed to be printed, you know. So, I don't know, I never seen it in any papers there, you know. But it was very well received, you know. And I even got one touching thanks, you know. He reached a hand right across the Atlantic, you know, and thanked me for that writing, you know. So it was quite interesting. And then I suppose I could start at the beginning. I didn't tell you about my niece, you know. She asked me if I, Agnes, she asked me if I knew anything, any English at all. I said, no. I says, all I know, I says, they used to come back from Montana, you know, and they said all I could understand was yes and no. Well, she says, I know two words, she says, and you might just as well get it if they're going to help you, any. And she says, that's money and trunk, you know. And that's the way I started Westward Ho, you know, on money and trunk, you know. And yes and no.
Right.
So this was kind of an evening in the last part of March, I guess. I don't know exactly the date.
About what year was it when you came?
That was in 1914. I stood on the quay there, and that's what we call it, the old country, quay. Mm-hmm. Wharf, you know, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, German.
Yeah. Right.
I stood there and said farewell to my niece there, Agnes, and her friend, you know, and also girlfriend, also my girlfriend for that.
You came over on your own as a bachelor?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I went on the Vega from the Bergen Steamship Company, you know, and we took off westward, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I ever went abroad, you know, and we landed in, I don't know how long it took, but when I got towards England, you know, I got a kind of bit tipsy because everybody had a bit of whiskey, you know, and they could have two bottles apparently, you know, but they had to be opened, you know, not just now. And so we had quite a bit. It was better than to throw it into the North Sea for the fishes, I guess.
Sure. So, when did you come to the Peace Country?
I come to the Peace Country in 1918, in the fall of 1918.
From where? What part of Canada?
No, from Dakota.
Oh, you went to the States first and then came from Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
What made you come up here? What had you heard?
Well, that's another story, you know. I always wanted a little farm of my own, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was just working for people down there, you see. So I thought that would, and the land was all taken up there, over there, you know. So I come up here, and I couldn't come right away because I was drafted for the army in the States, you know.
Oh, yes.
I was supposed to fight the old Kaiser, you know, Bill. And the funniest part of it, I didn't have much stomach for that because I knew Kaiser Bill, you know. In fact, I got a cigar from him one time, and that's more than I got from any
right.
other guys, you know. So, well, they told us anyway, we was needed most in the grain fields than what we would do in the army, because there was a lot of volunteers. Everybody was volunteers, you know, so they could pick the job that they wanted to need. And if they, if you get drafted, you see, you got to go on, and you got not any say at all, I guess, you know. So
well, how old were you then?
I guess I was about 23 year old, I think.
Yeah. And you were still on your own?
Oh, yeah.
How did you come up from Dakota?
Well, I got through the immigration business, you know, and the funniest part of it, I suppose, as you tell it anyway, because there's no harm done, I guess, because I just walked into Canada and there was no...
You just walked in?
Yeah, I just walked in
right.
To Windygate in Manitoba, and there was no no customs there at all. But then I went back again, you see, to the States, you know, after I'd been up here, you know, and filed on a homestead, and I come back again through North Portland, and I got really through the customs, so I'm not here on the wild goose.
mm-hmm. What place did you land at in the Peace Country? Where did you sort of settle?
In Baytree, Alberta, right across the line here, you see. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you know, we had an awfully time too, you know, coming up from Edmonton, you know, up on the railway. Oh gosh, you know, you were shaking and shaking and shaking, and I don't know how it went. And you look back in the curve, you know, and you could see the ties and the rails lifted up and slapped back again, you know, and the mud, you know, and there was mud all over there. And you had to go with it, you know, or else you could get hurt pretty bad, you know, because if you couldn't get out of it. And about 3 miles from Spear River, the Indian jumped the track and went in the muskeg there, and we were sitting there, you know, and I and another guy were trying to hike, you know, but there was a conductor standing on the road, you know. He says, go back. He says, you've got to stay here. He says, you can't get in anyway, because that's the flu here, you see. Flu was very bad. And I says, we'll fix that. So we took out in the muskeg, you know, and he took a string around a walk away, get away, and got into Spear River. And we got in there in the forenoon, and the train got in there late afternoon. We beat the train several hours.
What did you have in the way of supplies? You know, did you have anything? Were you carrying anything with you? Or did you just come in sort of with body and soul?
That's it. I didn't. I thought I was going to buy some supplies down in Dakota, you know, and bring up. And I didn't have much money. And, well, I had about 2,000 saved up, you know. And when I come up here, you know, and found out that I was really a rich man, you know.
I bet you were.
Yeah. But I never made any money. That's for sure.
So how did you get from, did you go from Spirit River straight to Baytree?
Yeah, we walked then.
You walked from Spirit River to Baytree?
Yeah.
I'll be damned. That's
and
a long walk.
Eh?
That's a long walk.
Yeah, well, they started out brisk enough, and as soon as we come to the first stopping, like Michelle there, you know, kind of a friend of mine, and by golly, we were kind of tired already, and we had to walk the rest of it, you know, and it took us several days, you know, and the only one I remember that's in the bunch was Mr. Endicott. I guess he's passed on now.
Endicott?
Endicott, yeah.
I remember an Endicott in the Gundy area.
Oh. Yeah, well, so that's how I got in here, and I filed on the homestead, and I had a bit of trouble there, too. I thought, by golly, I was going to go back to the States, because I went over, walked over to the land office, you know, and he was down there on the Beset Creek, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I seen him sitting there reading on the paper and smoking a pipe, you know, I rapped on the door. Oh, he said, too late today. He says, come back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of funny, you know, so I thought, by golly, I'm going to fix that, so I went down to Pusa, stayed there overnight, you know, and I got there fairly early, and on the next day I rapped on the door again. Oh, he says, too early, he says, time now.
What do you do with a guy like that, eh?
Well, nothing. After he once let me in, he was nice enough, you know, but I guess he was just part of the rules, like, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, that's lots of fun. Yeah. So, I went back. I stayed around here. I was working for a guy up there north, you know. And, I didn't want to, but then he tried to get a neighbor there to work for him, and he couldn't do it. So I says, I'll work for you, you know, Dan Abel, you know, an old timer there. So we were pitching bundles there, you know, and we happened to talk about wages. And he says, what do you get down in the Curate? Well, I says, in the threshing, I says, we got $6 a day. He put a fork down on the stake. He said, I can't pay that. Well, I says, I didn't ask you to pay anything. So that was it. But there was one thing that happened there, you know. I don't know what it was, but I don't know if I should sell it. You see, I got constipated, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was eating good, you know. When you move from one place to another, it seems like you get a heck of an appetite, you know. Mm-hmm. But I never paid any attention, you know, and I must have gone about 14 days, you see, without anything coming out, you know. So I come back to Edmonton, you know, and I went to see a drug test there, and he says, you should be dead by now. He says, what the heck is the matter with you? Haven't you got no sin? I guess not. I says, haven't you got no sin? Well, he says, I'll give you a pill, he says. It was a little red pill, he says. And if that doesn't work, he says, you go see the doctor right away. Because this is getting serious, he says. Oh, all right. So I booked in on the Selkirk Hotel, you know, and I didn't know what was going to happen. And I lay down and sleep there. And pretty soon I had to get up. And by gosh, I had that toilet for about pretty near an hour. I kept on a dumping. Somebody rapped on the door, you know. Nothing doing.
You were busy.
I was busy. And then later on, you know, there was somebody rapped on the door, you know, what you mean, you know, a friendly tap, you know, but I said, nothing doing, you know. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, yeah, that was a...
How did you start out on your homestead in Bay Tree? What did you have to start with? How many acres of land and what in the way of machinery?
You see, I went back to the States then, you see, in the fall, and I come back in the spring again. Like I told you, I came back North Portal, you see. Well, there's 160 acres of land, you see. That's all we could do, you see. I was not in the army, and you see, the soldiers, they got to have a section, you know. But I could only get a quarter because... Well, I didn't get in the army. Mm-hmm. So we started out, you know, the first thing we had to do was to build a cabin, you know. And of course, I done that myself, you know. Mm-hmm. I got a Frenchman there to help me cut the logs, you know, John Hickey. Mm-hmm. And he helped me building, you know, and we built a shack in no time, you know, and I was all set for the, you know. And as far as getting grub was concerned, that didn't bother us at all, you know, as long as he had a bit of a flour and yeast, you know, and so on, you know, and rifle and ammunition and a shotgun, you know. If I wanted a meal, all I had to do was to open, well, there was a hole in the window anyway, and I shot a prairie chicken, you know, with a rifle, and it just
from the window.
Shake a bit, you know, and the rest of it'll sit there. So I just let it lay there till the rest of them flew away, and I picked it up, you know. And that's mostly what we had, you know. Huh? And I had to clear the whole thing by hand. There was nothing over. It was not a foot clear, you see. Mm-hmm. It was all windfalls and not much brush, you know. It had been a fire sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. And peewits was way up, you know. It was really nice, you know. So I didn't know exactly, you see, there was no road there, so I didn't know exactly where the line was, but I went in pretty sure, you know, so I wasn't going to build on the road allowance and so on, you know, so I got that straightened out. And I built it in a place where the snow went off first in the spring, you know, so I thought it should be fairly high because it was a level ground, you see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But how big was Spirit River? That was the end of steel at the time, was it not?
Well, that's the end of the steel from there, but you see, it also went to Grand Prairie, you see, mm-hmm. but from Roycliffe, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And there was, at that time, you see, they were building, they were going to build a road from the Spear River in here, you see, and they had bridges and everything all set, you know. Mm-hmm. But they never come about, you see.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was
Did you spend much time around Dawson Creek, or were you mainly in the Alberta section around Baytree and up there?
Well, when I first came here, there was no Dawson Creek, so I couldn't visit it anyway, you know.
Right.
So I better keep under there. I'm telling them about that, that place across the creek there.
Yeah, yeah, you were saying.
You got it on now?
Yeah.
Well, that place across the creek there was called Bullenville, you know. Mm-hmm. And there was only two houses there, you know. There was Mr. Bullen and then, oh, I can't remember the other guy now, just now, but he had a kind of a barn on the other side, you know, and there. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have no Dawson Creek, and now there is no Bullenville anymore.
Do you remember when they moved the town side of Dawson Creek over to where it is?
No, I don't.
You went around then, eh?
Well, I was over on the Alberta uh-huh. side, you know, I remember when it was done, all right. And I remember the first buildings, of one of the first buildings that was ever moved in was that China restaurant or hotel there, you know, I don't know what they call it just now, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's no more either, they tear them down, you know.
Do you remember anything about the early doctors and whatnot in the area? For example, I know a bit about the local area. How about in Alberta? There was a Dr. Boyd in Peace River at one time. Do you remember what the doctoring situation was at all?
Well, yes, of course. As far as the doctors concerned, you see, when we first come in here, you know, it was in the flu year, you see, in 1918, and people were dying like flies, you know, someplace, you know. Mm-hmm. But we were, I guess we really thought that we beat the death here, you know, because when we hear the first one that died in here, you know, that was a daughter of one poor scoopy man there, you know, and we started to think, but we didn't get away from it even here. But there was no doctor here in Poos, or the nearest one, I guess, was Grand Prairie, you know. Mm-hmm. But we didn't need no doctor anyway, because everybody was healthy, and there was no hospital, and there was no graves either, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Miss Baxter, that's it. That's the name of the girl that first day died, you know. Mm-hmm. It flu, like, you know. So it was...
What about the first medical setup in your area, in the Alberta side of the Peace? What was the town that had the first hospital or the first doctor?
Well, now you got me there a bit, you know, because I never paid much attention, but no, I don't know, but they eventually got a hospital there in Spirit River, you know, and then uh-huh. I guess at that time I think they had one in Grand Prairie, you know. Uh-huh. But I didn't know much about it. You see, when I come in here, you know, there was a poor scoopy in a way, you know, but it was only two buildings as far as I know. It was the store there, and then there was what I call Baxter, you know. And he had a livery stable and so on, you know, on the other side of the street, like, you know, road. And then there was Mr. Lalodge. He was there pretty close, you know, and by the way, he pretty well had the same name as I, you know, except he had Lee Ola ahead of it, you know, and mm-hmm. outside of that, L-O-G-E, you know, that was, according to there, I guess, a lodge, you know. I used to get letters, you know, and they told me, here's a letter for you. I opened it up, you know, without looking at anything, and here's something I... No savvy, you know. So I got advised after that, you know, I looked at it for sure, you know, that if there was just a little large, you know, so never was trouble with that anymore, you know.
What were some of the problems you had when you, you know, what were some of the things that stand out as things that were difficult to get used to up in this country?
Well, I really don't know about that. I don't know. It seems like there was no difficulties much. You know, you were all by yourself. You know, you had to be on your own altogether. You see, when I first come there, I didn't even have a door in the shack. You know, But I had a weasel. You know, there one winter. You know, he could keep the mice away. You know, and then the big fella. You know, and whenever I started to work on the cooking, you know, he come right alongside of me and he started to,
yeah.
Then he wanted something to eat, and I tried to touch him, you know, he went back in a hole. Big, he's twice as big. And I can hear him running around sometimes over my clothes, you know, at nights, you know. But he never bothered me, you know, and in the spring, I don't know what happened, he left me anyway, you know. I guess it wasn't very good company, so.
Well, maybe a weasel just don't get used to men. What about farming? What did you first use to farm in the way of machinery and whatnot? How did you plant your crops?
Well, yes, that was quite a thing, you see. At first, you see, we didn't have very much, you know. Well, we had a bracken plow, of course, you know, and in some sort, and then we had a harrow, you know, and some of this machinery we picked up on the sale, you know, and sometimes we bought it new, you know, but we didn't have much money, so we had to go kind of easy. And the first year we broadcasted it, you know, by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you can broadcast to beat the band, you know. And there's one thing I notice, it's different from now, you know. It seems like when the grain come up, seems like one morning it wasn't there, another morning there was green all over, you know, it just comes up, you know, like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another thing, you know, what I was surprised at, you know, I remember I had 20 acres around the building, you know, and I seeded it to wheat, and I got 999 bushels out of that on the tally.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be a little more, because they always give a good weight, you know, as a rule, you know. So there was over 1,000 bushels there under 20 acres, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's quite a...
That's quite a crop.
Quite a crop. I had that twice, you know. And then I had some years I didn't have much of anything, you know.
You were saying earlier on about the climate of the area. Our Chinooks in February.
Yeah, well, that's the summer of a muster, you see. When we first come in here, and for a long time, the weather was awful nice, you know, and we had what you call Indian summer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we had nice, nice weather, you know, and I don't know, the weather seems to be getting cockeyed lately, you know, because we got in another suckle or whatever you call it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I guess it turns around, I believe, you know. Of course, there's one thing, you know, we never got the rain when we should have, you know, you're taking the... In the first summer here, you know, you might really... you don't really expect any rain, you know, till way out in June, you know. And you have to be prepared for that, you know. But we had more... well, we didn't have so much rain as we have now, but we seems to get the rain in the wrong time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well... I think we'll do better if we started in and out again.
You've been listening to Mr. Leahy, an 83-year-old pioneer who left his mark on the Peace Country and now spends his time reminiscing and playing chess.